Oikos presents 15 Seconds of Strength. Here we go. Steve's got a trunk full of groceries and no one to help him.
Oh, that's tough, Jim. Looks like a 5-trip load at least.
He grabs the first bag, the second. Bob, it looks like he's trying to do it all one trip. He shimmies the door open, steps over the dog. Oh, and he stumbles.
Oh, right into the kitchen without missing a beat. Mm. Jim, now that's a man who eats his protein-packed Oikos.
With 15 grams of complete protein in each cup, Oikos Triple Zero can help build strength for every day. Oikos, stronger makes everything better.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The recovery from the pandemic. Uneven. I read in The Economist magazine and I welcome Simon Cox, the emerging markets correspondent. He is in Asia observing the uneven recovery worldwide from the pandemic, the reopening of economies. Simon, a very good day to you in Hong Kong. The uneven recovery starts with the U.S. doing very well. Thank you very much. However, there are unknowns ahead, such as the variants. In Great Britain right now, there's a delay of the full reopening because of the so-called Delta variant or Delta Plus variant. But in any event, what does an uneven recovery mean for the global financial picture? How should we imagine the fact that the U.S. is going to grow well over the next year and some nations are going to grow poorly? You call it the tale of two recoveries. Good day to you.
Well, good day to you, and thanks for having me on. Yes, so the U.S. is obviously doing well, both because the vaccination program has picked up pace, more than half the population now vaccinated, also this very large fiscal stimulus that America is enjoying. And Europe has also caught up somewhat with the vaccinations as well. So despite the immediate fears we have now in Britain with the Delta variant, the economic picture is much improved in those parts of the world. But the unevenness is incredibly striking, and it's driven largely by these vaccination rates that just differ wildly between the richer countries and the poorer countries, with some exceptions. So in the very poorest countries, the sort of bottom 29, less than 1% of the population is vaccinated. In middle-income countries, countries like China, India, there is a great deal of variation, but still nothing quite like the rich countries. And, it's unusual that the global economy, which is, very big and very complex, should turn on this one variable, this one factor, vaccination. But it really does explain more than anything else right now. So you can look at forecasts for growth right now. You can plot them against vaccination rates, and there's a very clear relationship. Now, that's causing all sorts of financial strains, as you alluded to. An uneven recovery is better than none at all. But it does mean that as economies like America power ahead, that has spillover effects on the rest of the world. And the one that emerging markets are watching very closely right now is inflation, and particularly talk about inflation in the U.S. and how America's central bank, the Federal Reserve, might respond. And that has immediate effects on financial markets in emerging economies, too. And the worry is that they might have to follow suit and tighten monetary policy, even though their economies are not quite as resilient and not quite as inoculated against the vaccine as America's.
You provide a chart at in The Economist of the COVID-19 vaccinations and lockdown stringency. How shall I read this chart? I see the United States plotted down here, Britain plotted there. What am I looking for in this chart, Simon, the variables that are being counted?
So if you look at how vaccination helps economies, the most obvious mechanism is it allows governments to lift any social restrictions they might have imposed. It allows people to go about their business with greater freedom, people who had self-imposed restrictions on their activities. And so that has a very immediate effect on economic progress. And so you can see a fairly clear relationship between higher vaccination rates and a less stringent lockdown, perhaps no lockdown at all. But there are also some interesting exceptions to this rule. So there are some countries where there isn't much of a lockdown, but there isn't much vaccination either. And these tend to be countries in my part of the world, in Asia Pacific, that actually handled the virus quite well in the early stages before there was a vaccine to containment policies, but have been quite slow in taking up vaccines. And so in those economies, there isn't actually much of a lockdown right now. Hong Kong, people are going about their business quite freely, but the vaccination rates are disappointing. And then the other exceptions, which in some ways are the ones to keep an eye on, especially if you're in the financial markets, are countries that are under lockdown now, that are making rapid progress with vaccinations. And so those lockdown measures might ease in a matter of months or so. And there you'll probably see quite striking outperformance in the next few months. That's a pattern we've seen in the past. So the countries I'm looking at there might include places like Malaysia, perhaps, which, you know, is under quite a strict lockdown at the moment. The economy is suffering quite badly. But if vaccination picks up pace, that could all change reasonably quickly.
Watching emerging markets, and you mentioned they might have to tighten early, I believe that the Brazil Central Bank, the Russia Central Bank, and the Turkey Central Bank have already tightened. What does that teach us about the future? Is there a lesson here?
So those central banks are in some ways exceptionally hawkish, especially Brazil and Russia. And they're battling inflation pressures of their own right now. And also they're quite worried that what everyone's calling temporary inflation might turn out to be quite persistent. And it's quite interesting to sort of look at their analysis. So, for example, the Russian central bank governor was saying that that it's not just that spending has picked up, it's that the composition of spending has changed. And whereas in the past, you know, if people start demanding new things and demanding less of old things, if they start demanding more delivery services, less restaurant meals, in the past, you know, businesses would respond by investing to bring supply into line with changed demand. But there's so much uncertainty right now that businesses don't know whether these changes in the patterns of consumer spending are going to last. And if they're not going to last, it's not worth changing your business to accommodate them. And so as a result, we've got this changed pattern of spending, got unchanged business investment decisions, and so you've got a mismatch. And that's resulting in some price pressures that might be quite persistent. So Russia's been quite hawkish. We've seen the Hungarians hike just in the past day. So Central Europe is also thinking about tightening monetary policy. In Asia, they've been a bit more cautious. They're still quite worried about the impact of the pandemic, particularly in places like India.
Speaking to emerging markets particularly, you report that there was an instance heretofore, I believe 2013, that might instruct us. It was called a taper tantrum. What was that, and could it come again?
Yes, so that's very much a live issue at the moment. And what it teaches you is how sensitive emerging markets are, even to a few stray words from America's central bankers. So the taper tantrum was in 2013. It happened when Ben Bernanke, who was then chairman of the Federal Reserve, talked about the possibility of a slower pace of asset purchases by the Fed, so a tapering of their asset purchases, slightly tighter monetary policy, if you will. And that had an immediate effect on financial markets around the world, and particularly on emerging markets. And so right now, we're worried about a repeat of that. The Fed, in its last meeting, surprised a lot of people in the financial markets by talking about raising interest rates in 2023, which was a bit sooner than people had expected. And so emerging markets won't want to get too far behind that, because if the Federal Reserve raises interest rates, that attracts capital back to America. That weakens the exchange rates in emerging economies, and that has an inflationary impact. And also it makes debts harder to service if they're in foreign currencies. The emerging economies get quite nervous when they see their currencies drop like that, and they feel they have to fight back by raising their own interest rates, even though that can have a slowing effect on their economies. And so that's the sort of dilemma that emerging economies could find themselves in if this taper talk in America picks up more steam.
Is there any indication now that the emerging markets have made a decision? You note that the words of the chair of the Federal Reserve move markets from what appeared to be a decline last week to right back where they started now. Are the emerging markets as sensitive as the traders on Wall Street?
They're very sensitive. They seem to have drawn slightly different lessons, so they don't seem to have recovered quite as quickly as the other markets have. And I think also places like Brazil don't want to take any chances with this. And so I think they'll carry on raising interest rates quite determinedly. They want to get ahead of this rather than having to catch up later. The countries that have a more striking dilemma are places like India, where they're battling this wave of the coronavirus. But inflation is also quite high, so that puts them in a very awkward position. And they, too, will find life harder if interest rates in America seem to be likely to rise sooner than we thought.
So it's every central banker for himself, Simon. We have 30 seconds. Is that the lesson here? Pay attention. There is no trend right now.
Every central banker needs to keep an eye on inflation in their own country, growth in their own country, vaccinations in their own country, and on America's Fed. Those are the things you have to keep an eye on if you're an emerging market central banker. That's right.
That's a great deal. Simon Cox, he is emerging markets for The Economist magazine. He's in Asia. He's in Hong Kong. A Tale of Two Recoveries, to be continued. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to the Wealth Break Podcast, a real conversation about finance.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone.
I feel like sometimes being broke is a cycle and that we might have to revisit that.
And we're not stopping at success stories.
What happens when it doesn't go right? How do you cope with it?
Because wealth isn't just about money. It's about creating a life where you thrive and help others do the same.
Listen to the Wealth Break Podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest. Life comes at you fast, which is why it's important to find some time to relax. A little you time. Enter Chumba Casino. With no download required, you can jump on anytime, anywhere for the chance to redeem some serious prizes. So treat yourself with Chumba Casino and play over 100 online casino-style games, all for free. Go to ChumbaCasino.com to collect your free welcome bonus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Having MG can make cooking difficult, but over the years, I've found some really helpful tools and tips that I'm excited to share. Hi, I'm Alicia. I think cooking should always be fun, creative, and of course, delicious. These black bean burgers are hearty, full of flavor, and MG friendly. You're gonna love them.
Check out Alicia's Black Bean Burger cooking video and other recipes full of tips and tricks for managing common MG symptoms while cooking only at mg-united.com.
Ready? Let's cook.